And we'll have the next couple of speakers. I'll give everyone 30 seconds to just find their way back. I want to thank Liz Waters, Ruben and Jody for doing that amazing spread of food. It was just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Really phenomenal. Thank you. We've got Costa back up, and I'm introducing Kirsten Bradley and Nick Ritter from Milkwood Permaculture to talk about their book, which just came out a couple of months ago, and it's phenomenal. And I'm really excited for it, particularly for the beekeeping chapter, because I always have trouble explaining to people what the weird hippie beekeeping I'm doing is. And now I'm just going to give them your book.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to hand it over to you guys. Really interested to hear about it. Thank you.
Okay, the thing I want to do as a little bit of a thread from our last conversation with Jack and Dav is just go on with that theme about the community garden. And don't, I suppose think about the community garden as a place. Oh, everyone happy? Think about the community garden as a place where you can not just grow food. It's about the connections and the understandings. So whether you've got a farm up the road or not doesn't exclude you from getting involved in the community garden. If anything, it gives you more license to, because then you can come and share, replicate and grow deeper community connections. And when I talk about that, I couldn't offer you two better examples of building community connections than Nick and Kirsten. I've been fortunate enough to share a reasonable part of their journey along the Milkwood Road. But they took education and they took everything about this book to urban dwellers through their Milkwood permaculture. But they were running it out on Nick's parents' farm in Mudgee, which was no easy task, given that it was 3.5-4 hours from Sydney. There was no real public transport, and they were running courses in Sydney at the same time. So they're running this organisation that wants to get people connected to the country. They're running courses in the city and courses in the country, educating and getting people engaged and interested. And there's no two better people to meet than these two when it comes to that. And this book was not a book that was just written because, oh, well, there's a little bit of space in permaculture. This book is a reflection of how they've synthesized topics through connecting with experienced people in different fields and making it engaging for city folk, connecting them through the web, selling out courses because they've actually got people that are just so up for their courses that they want to do the mushroom course. They then want to do the beekeeper's course. They then want to do the soil course. They then want to do the intro to market gardening course. And they live in a one-bedroom apartment with no balcony. And they want to do the intro to market gardening.
Yeah, we don't encourage that.
But that's the level of change that they've brought in to the space. They've brought in this energy and interest in growing community. And they've built a community, and the community that they've built has responded, because when they've done their book tour, it's been sellout to come to events. And they've broken the book up into these wonderful digestible pieces. In this case, the workshop tomorrow is on seaweed, isn't it?
Yep.
How did you go about writing the book? Like, when you think about all of the information that you have, everything that's been going on, all the presentations, all the workshops, all the permaculture courses that you've taught, where do you sit down and say, how do we make this interesting without turning it into a tome the height of this cafe?
We had the option to either try and do the sort of book that has a little bit on everything. We've all read some of those books, and I love them, actually. The self-sufficiency manuals that have one page on this and one page on that, and they're, 600 pages long. We didn't really want to write that book. We wanted to make people fall in love with different things that they can do that will draw them into this kind of life. So we chose 5 subjects, and we'd like to do a whole series of these books where you sort of dive in deeply and you think you're just reading about tomatoes and learning to grow a really great organic tomato. But via that, in the same way as you were explaining before, that, you know, you don't buy it, you go to your local nursery, you find a way to do it, you find the components you need, you talk to your community garden, you talk to the local people, you find the local seed stock, da 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 da, and before you know it, you're invested in your community and you're invested in a different kind of life that you thought you had, and you've gone in via tomatoes or mushrooms or beekeeping or seaweed.
I mean, that was the thing. We started Milkwood in 2007, and when we started it, we wanted to help people create that kind of community connection and connection to place where they were. And you know, for us, that overarching philosophy is permaculture. You know, is this combination of ethics and principles and design frameworks to be able to make place better, to make community better. But you say the word permaculture and people glaze over. You know, permaculture is something that... some people glaze over. That it's a bit challenging. It's a weird word. It's got the word cult in the middle of it. You know,
it's associated with...
It is associated with long-haired, bearded hippies. And so for us, a lot of the things that we taught over the years and that we've asked people to come teach for us have been gateway drugs. You know, they're gateway drugs into permaculture. You learn about tomatoes, or you learn about foraging seaweed, or you learn about beekeeping. But the way we teach beekeeping, it's permaculture beekeeping. Or the way we teach tomatoes, it's permaculture tomatoes. And so it's a bit of a furf, really. The book is about permaculture. It's about how to create, you know, local food and local community. But we do it through these 5 subjects that we love really deeply. They're all things that we're really closely connected to and personally connected to. You know, Kirsten grew up on the coast at Kiama, a couple of hours south of Sydney. And, you know, the seaweed and that connection to salt water has been something that's been part of your life since day one, you know, in that house at Kiama Downs. And for me, I used to live in far western New South Wales. I grew up on a national park out there, and we used to go to the city, to Sydney, to visit my grandparents, my father's mum and dad, and they were refugees from the Second World War, and my grandparents were tomato farmers. So for me, going to the western suburbs of Sydney was going to a 35-acre farm with 5 acres of tomatoes. That's what I thought Sydney was. And it was pruning and picking tomatoes. So, you know, the things that we chose to talk about were the things that we love, but they're also sort of sneaky ways into permaculture.
How did you, while we're on that topic of the 5 things, how did you break it down? Was there a big list and you were throwing darts, or were you throwing tomatoes at it? Well, I don't know. How'd you break it down to make it as engaging as it is in terms of just that shortened version?
There was, it was a big list. Some of them got struck off for the first book because they were considered a bit weird. We felt we had to sort of draw everyone into a false sense of normalcy before we could really hit them with the crazy topics.
Were there blow-ups? Were there blow-ups?
No, no,
were there
no.
any arguments?
No, no, I just... Whatever Kirsten said. Pretty much.
Although there were 7 chapters to begin with, and the editor was like, this is like the Bible. We can't print this. You've got to cut some out.
Oh, who got chopped?
The we chickens. Can't
say, no. Chickens got chopped.
Yeah.
And outrage.
And seed saving.
Yeah. Oh, so that was the next book. Or maybe the one after. But the list is still there. It's a big, long list. It's going to take a while to get through them all. But the thing is, you know, we didn't want to do that sort of 10 pages or 5 pages on each thing. So that's, I mean, Kirsten did the vast majority of the writing in the book. And I think, like, the mushroom chapter was 18,000 words, and the publishers are like, nah, 10,000 word limit on any chapter, and that's still 60 pages on mushroom. You probably would have been bored with the other, 30-odd pages or 40 pages on mushrooms if it had been in there. So they did the right thing, but, you know, that's why it's only five things. It's really kind of five books all joined together.
And it also came... Has anyone heard of the Foxfire books or read the Foxfire books? Yeah. This incredible series that came out of the Appalachians, mountain range in the USA, and it started as a high school oral history project of the students collecting the elders' oral histories, and it turned into this, I don't know, 13 of these incredible books that have chapters like coffin making, corn shucking, banjo playing, ghost stories, planting by the moon. And that's the book. And it's incredible.
Ginseng and barrel making and harvesting water.
And just, you know, the lilt to the conversations and all the information and the incredible personal stories. And before you know it, you're all about coffin making. You really, really are. And I love those books to bits and pieces. And I was like, wow, you really can get anyone into any subject you choose if you draw them in. And it's like, coming, sit at my table, I'm going to make you a beer or a cup of tea, and I'm going to talk to you about coffin making. And so we wanted to do a similar thing to draw people into the table, to get them chatting, to get them thinking, and then, you know, wherever they go from there is fantastic because they're in the room of thinking about doing things for themselves.
But in saying that, for the last 11 or 12 years or so, both of you have ridden a massive changing landscape in social media and internet and communication, and you've maintained a capacity to get people engaged. What do you say to people, like the audience here today, in terms of, you know, ways that they can engage their family, their work colleagues, you know, their street, whatever it is, the community? What are some of those key markers that you've learnt over this changing landscape for getting people excited and being able to coalesce it into five topics?
It's a bit of a double-edged sword. You know, frankly, it'd be great if you followed us on Instagram, but then turn off your phone, because, you know, real community doesn't happen through social media. So it's a weird thing to have to play this game where you kind of... It's like going into a shopping mall and then encouraging someone to start a vegetable garden. The shopping mall sucks. It's a horrible place and we really want to get people out of it. But you actually have to go to the shopping mall because that's where the people are. I don't know if that answers your question. But that engagement with people, you have to go to where they are. You know, you have to go to the place where they currently are. And then you have to make it really inviting. We were both artists before we started Milkwood, and I suppose that's what trying to struggle and survive as artists and not making any money and, you know, just eking out an existence. You have to make it look good, and you have to make it engaging with people. So that's probably what made us a little bit different in the sort of permaculture world, was trying to bring this really abundant and joyful and really positive and beautiful look to things. But that's really, again, it's like throwing out the bait and then reeling people in, because eventually you're going to be dealing with a compost toilet. You know, you're going to be dealing with that drought or that that disease with a plant. You know, and that doesn't make it to Instagram. But engaging people so that they care and they want the end result. And once they care and they know they want to get those amazing, you know, 80-year-old shepherded tomatoes, and they want to build that connection to the elders and to build that connection with their local school or build that connection with their community, because they actually want the end result, which is the incredible food that you just can't buy. You know, and it's those incredible experiences that you have with people that you can't buy from someone, because nobody could ever do it professionally, because they'd go broke, because it's insane the amount of effort we put into the things that we grow, or the beer that we brew, or the bread that we make. You all can do that so much better than somebody can do at a commercial level, because you can commit time and ego and love to it and not have to look at the bottom line.
It's interesting what you said, because flavour, taste, table. Friends of ours who run Epicurean Harvest, two young market gardeners suffering heavily from the drought up in the Blue Mountains west of Sydney. They need a dam, and they put on a fundraiser recently called I'll Be Damned. And they put $70 for a day, come out, morning tea, cheeses, a walk around the farm, and a lunch cooked by Peter Gilmore and another chef from Sydney, because they grow the specific vegetables that Peter wants grown for his restaurants, his top-end restaurants in Sydney. And then an afternoon a panel discussion. They sold it out, $70 a head, 200 people paid for their dam. Like that. This is that level. This is that level of yearning that's going on in this space. And Kirsten, in terms of building an Instagram and Facebook and social media presence, you've been driving this storytelling. How do you deal with that consistent change, but given also that there's a bubbling yearning there. People are wanting this, and you've been connecting with that. Mm. What is that? Can you tell me where's that freaking pulse?
Oh.
Like, because you have a, you've got, and I'm not talking it up, I'm just telling it as it is. You've consistently found and moved with that pulse. Look at my veins getting all excited. It's all gone blue.
It's been a really interesting journey. I've got such a love-hate relationship with social media. I got on social media right at the start, and at that point I only connected with other farmers. We were establishing a market garden at the time in the sort of environment that a market garden should not be established. And everyone I knew on social media was showing off their tomatoes or their tomato diseases or whatever it was, and we were going backwards and forwards pretty ceaselessly, giving each other advice or commiserating or celebrating. And so I came from the perspective that it was a useful tool for us to use within our lives. Social media is many, many, many things. It is not only a useful tool or a happy place, but we have found it a really interesting way of communicating as honestly and as openly as possible. And I think honest communication and telling stories for the right reasons does cut through a lot of the bullshit that is there, which is not to say there isn't some really dodgy things going on with every social media environment. But it's a bit like the shopping mall. It is where people are, so I don't want to sit in the back seat of my car grumbling that there's no one to talk to. I would rather be at the shopping mall trying to avoid eating the Dunkin' Donuts, even though they smell incredible, and having worthwhile and meaningful conversations with people with the end game to be, let's get out of here and go to the community garden.
Yeah.
And then you're bringing them then to this kind of level of in-depth truth in that sense.
Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, none of these things are incredibly hard. Like, I mean, whether it's growing tomatoes or keeping bees or, you know, going and collecting some seaweed, it's not rocket science. But people do need to feel like it is easy or like it is easier. You can't gloss over the fact that things are challenging, but you do need to give them something meaty to get into. Sorry?
And permission.
Yeah, permission to do it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that everybody can do this kind of stuff. I mean, you all do, undoubtedly, engage in growing things, whether it be, you know, food or even just ornamental stuff. The act of gardening and physically connecting with the place that you live is an incredibly powerful thing for building community and refreshing the soul and refreshing your physical health as well. You know, without it, you start to rot. If you don't use your body, then you start to fall to bits. And for us, I mean, that's the long-term goal, is to continually engage with these practices because they actually make us better. You know, they make us into who we want to be, rather than, if you think about all the other things in the world that don't make you into who you want to be. And Netflix doesn't make you into who you want to be. You know, social media certainly doesn't either. For us, social media was this thing that we turned to when we lived in the middle of nowhere and we didn't have... Like, we literally lived a few kilometres from a place called World's End, right? It was
next to Mount Horrible.
Yeah. It was a really lovely place. So we didn't show the pictures of that. We showed the really positive stuff.
Hashtag.
Yeah, hashtag Mount Horrible.
Hashtag Mount Horrible.
World's End.
Hashtag World's End.
Which is next to Mount Disappointment. And I always want to know which mountain was named first. Did they get up to Mount Disappointment and see Mount Horrible? Or was it the other way around?
Well, maybe Mount Horrible was the disappointment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, we actually... Milkwood comes partly from... I mean, it's Dylan Thomas. The reference is the Dylan Thomas reference, obviously. But La Grebe, the town that is under Milkwood, spelt backwards is Bugger All. And we lived at the back of Bugger All, so that's why we chose Milkwood as a name, one of the reasons.
Oh, I didn't know that. Any questions from the floor? We've got one over to the left there.
Gav.
The next five chapters?
Oh. Good question.
It's in secret. Well, you got to negotiate that yet.
Yeah, there's another big list, another big dartboard. So yeah.
We're trying to work out we're going to try and do one vegetable, one weird thing, one hard thing, one's a technical thing.
Yeah, I just want to get to humanure. That's the chapter I'm looking forward to writing. But can I get it into book two, or does I have to wait to book three? Do we have to prove ourselves before the mainstream publisher, who are not owned by Murdoch, even though they're called Murdoch Books? They're owned by Allen and Unwin, just so you know. Good. Anyway, I want to get pretty meaty in the series, but I'm wondering how much I have to, you know, talk about chickens before I can get into it. We'll see.
Do you feel the interest in this area is growing? I mean, we hang shit on the younger generation that they don't know anything and all that sort of stuff. They know it. Do you feel that there is an interest in this and it is growing?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, well, we've been doing what we do 10 years, and the amount of education about why glyphosate may not be a really great thing in gardening and even farming courses 10 years ago was a very different conversation to what we're having now. So I think public awareness of why these sorts of skills are a damn fine idea is definitely growing, but also, a hunger for reconnection with community and ecosystems and everything else, I think, is definitely, thank goodness, on the up.
Yeah, Dave Holmgren, whose place we live on, co-founder of or co-originator of the permaculture idea, he talks about these peaks and troughs of the history of permaculture pretty much being the opposite of economic growth. You know, whenever you have, like the 80s, this time when there was massive economic growth, that was when permaculture was kind of quiet. And then you have a blip in the economic growth and people go, well, wait up, we're not earning so much. We're not, our job futures are a little bit more scary. Our risk of our house mortgage not making repayments is a bit harder. So we turn to the home and start to get value out of that asset and start to create, you know, a lifestyle which is more home focused. But as each of those cycles happen, I think we're getting more strength in our community and more knowledge, which allows us to then, you know, build a little bit each time. We don't slip so far back each time. You know, there's a few more people who ride out the bad weather of the strong economy and don't get drawn back into the bullshit of the supermarkets and the bullshit of the high-paying job and the expensive car, and instead, you know, hang on to the beauty of home.
Do you think it'll always be a boutique thing? I mean, to feed a place like Melbourne, you need broadacre farming, don't you? Or
no, that's absolute bullshit. Sorry, but
this is language warning. Language warning.
Yeah.
Code violation.
80% of the world's population is fed by small organic farms. But let that sink in. The Green Revolution never fed the world. It's an absolute lie that high-tech, large-scale, get-big-or-get-out farming has ever fed a significant population of the planet. And it never will. It's unsustainable. That means you cannot sustain it. It's not a judgment call. I'm not judging broadacre agriculture and saying, ooh, you're unsustainable, you shouldn't do it. No, it's a physics thing. You know, it's physics and chemistry. So, yeah, sure, at the moment, most people in Melbourne are eating, you know, white bread and white sugar and 300 different ways of reflavouring high fructose corn syrup, and they're dying because of it. And they're only an incredible small percentage of the world's population. So, yeah, in Australia, the second richest nation on earth, as we were declared today in the newspaper, we're dying of that affluenza, eating that shit and getting it farmed with super high tech. Like, I'm a geek. I appreciate, you know, precision agriculture, but it isn't actually effective as a way of providing for the world's population. It never has been. And I'm not suggesting that home gardening will feed the world, but there's a million shades of grey between, you know, white and the black of, that's a terrible use of words, but the black and white extremes. There's all these greys of things which are closer to home gardening than they are to a, you know, 5,000 acre winter grain crop.
Can I interrupt? Oh, sorry, I'll take your question and then I'll interrupt and then we'll wrap up. Otherwise, I'm really never, ever coming back here.
My question is just actually jumping back to your saying sort of about permaculture, especially being the growth of, you know, when there's economic wealth and then that falls in growth. And relating this to young people, now I have four young people in their 20s and who are all highly engaged with the growing. Probably one less than the other three, but still interested. And I would actually sort of say that I don't think that actually, that sort of trajectory is attached to them at all. They're all Melbourne-based. Highly improbable that all of them will ever get into a housing market in Melbourne at all. So, and what I see them do, even with the smallest little North Fitzroy space and nature strips, it's pretty incredible.
Mm.
So I actually think it's actually more about their desire to connect with the earth, and it's a whole different type of emotional or spiritual type connection, whatever you want to call it, and it actually has a whole less to do with economics, because I think they've thrown out the whole concept of that 9-to-5 job, the whole concept of the big car, the whole concept of that, all those things. I think the vast majority of people are just thrown out the door anyway, because it doesn't exist for them anymore.
Yeah, and that's what we came out of, I suppose, when we left Melbourne. You know, living that kind of life, our desire was to reconnect with something a little more real. So it wasn't an economic choice. I mean, we had plenty of economic success in Melbourne, and we left out of a choice to reconnect with something more genuine. You know, so I totally agree that the pathway forward isn't just to rely on these economic dips as ways to get people excited. That's what's happened in the past.
Yeah.
The pathway now is to...
Yeah. Probably going to completely change that.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
I'd just like to interrupt this broadcast with a PNA. We need an acronym. Positive News Alert. Last night... No, it was actually the night before.
Mm-hmm.
Very good friends of Kirsten's and Nick's and myself. Run an organisation called Food Connect in Brisbane. And basically this is a community-supported agricultural project that's been going for 13 years. And they are incredibly ethical about their approach to food and food democracy and making food a very democratic future. And so they decided that the way that this is going to change is to actually, for the food system to buy out. We need to buy the infrastructure. So they launched about 8 weeks ago a GoFundMe with the plan of buying their shed, their big premises in Brisbane, where they bring in all this food from farmers from local farmers and provide boxes as well as off the internet orders. They needed to raise $2 million. And on Wednesday, that was the last day. And they, at that point, had about 470 contributors, and you could contribute minimum 500 up to 10,000 as individual investor. And they had some, what they call those investors?
Like angels.
Yeah, there's a name for these other investors, positive investors, who, what's that?
Well, social impact investors.
Yeah, impact investors, yeah. And anyway, some impact investors were getting involved. But when I went to film on Wednesday, I said to them, I'll do a live broadcast this afternoon. And they were at 1.4.
Yeah.
Wow. They needed $600,000 on Wednesday. And then I got home about 7 o'clock and I rang them. I said, I'll go live now. And I wrote on my Facebook page, live broadcast from my chicken coop. So I sat inside my chicken coop and did a live broadcast and called them in. And I said, oh, you know, rah, 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 you know, how's it all going, so on and so forth. And they said, well, you know, we're really just now thinking about what we're going to do and blah, 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 and, you know, we're going to hit the ground running. And I was like, what? And they said, we're there. And they got there. So as far as when you said and asked Nick and Kirsten before about what's going on in this space, that is one of the most positive, incredibly powerful domino knockdown elements, because a town like yours that may have already a food co-op will be able to benefit from taking on and saying, well, we're a quarter of a food connect or a half a food connect. But this is a model that they are going to play out and make, well, they're already making it work.
Mm. What's really special about that is that it isn't, this wasn't like a crowdfunding campaign. It's not where people were donating money. It was where the community was buying a share. So it's what do they call it? Crowd investment.
Investment, yeah.
Where you actually own a part of the organisation. So it's the community owning their own food hub and their own food network, which is very, very powerful because people, those shares are still worth something and you still own them. So it's like owning a share in a property. It is owning a share in a property.
Mm. So, I'll finish on that positive crowd note, but thanks. Thank you, Kirsten, and thank you, Nick. And, have a look at... I'm realising... I know from managing these events...
I've got my back to it. So.
Yeah, Nick's doing well. He's I know what it's going. Like when you're going like this and you're going, yeah, wrap it the fucking thing up. But anyway...
thank you, Costa.
Yeah, thank you. That's it. I'm off.
We'll have a little break for a few minutes if you want to grab a drink. We are running over time, but hopefully everyone's feeling relaxed about it.
It's Greek time. There's no such thing as overtime.
You guys invented time, didn't you? Yeah.